From the KTO newsroom, I'm Ryan Cunningham. Governor Mike Dunleavy is formally requesting help from the federal government for earthquake recovery efforts. The procedural step could unlock tens of millions of dollars in disaster relief funds for the state, businesses, and individuals who suffered property damage during the November 30th earthquake. As Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes reports, officials say it'll take months until they have a full accounting of all the damage.
In a conference room high in the Atwood building in downtown Anchorage, Dunleavy summarized the state's formal request for a major emergency disaster declaration from the Trump administration.
If this declaration is approved, it'll help free up money so that we can get Alaska back on its feet faster.
The administration is submitting a 15-page document to President Trump detailing the scale of the damage from ongoing assessments. So far, state officials estimate the earthquake's cost at around $100 million between Anchorage, the Matanuska-Susitna Borough, and the Kenai Peninsula Borough. Almost half of the money is for repairs to public infrastructure, bridges, schools, and government buildings. Tens of millions are needed for additional road work. And, says Brian Fisher, the state's recovery coordinator, as of this week, around 7,700 residents have filed reports of damage to their personal property.
It's a very large number. I've been in this job for 25 years, and this is the largest number of disaster applicants that I've seen in my career.
But officials say the state isn't done surveying the full extent of the damage. Fisher says that won't be completed until this summer. For the time being, the state's trying to guide residents living in temporary shelters to longer-term housing.
We are very much still in the response phase of this disaster. We have 151 individuals from 46 households that are still sheltered. Their homes are unlivable and they've been displaced.
The state's recorded another 643 homes with what's categorized as major damage, and another roughly 2,200 with some degree of impacts. There's no set timeline for when the White House will respond once it receives this new assistance request. After talks with the Trump administration, Dunleavy says he does not expect the current government shutdown to hinder the process. If it is granted, federal funds will eventually reimburse the state for up to 75% of the cost for repairs to public infrastructure. Homeowners would also become eligible for a little more than $34,000 per household in state and federal funds, although officials caution that is a maximum ceiling, not a guarantee. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
A new Congress begins today, and one of Senator Lisa Murkowski's first priorities is to pass a 680-page public lands bill. The bill has something for everyone. It's a compendium of wants and needs from Republicans and Democrats. Murkowski came within a hair's breadth of passing it late last month, but she was blocked by one senator. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin tells us about the bill and about the strange nature of the Senate, where a single person can foil the ambitions of 99.
Mr. President, I would ask unanimous consent on behalf of Chairman Hatch that the Senate proceed to the immediate consideration of the lands package bill.
Just before the Christmas break, Murkowski was on the Senate floor trying to pass the public lands bill in what's become a December tradition. The heart of the bill is always a collection of hyper-local issues. One section of it might expand a refuge to include a donated ranch, or Murkowski says it may deed land to a school.
It's pretty parochial. These don't come to the floor for debate and passage. What happens is typically and traditionally, it might not be a perfect process, but we bundle them up at the end of the year.
As chair of the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee, Murkowski is largely responsible for compiling the bill and negotiating its passage. A major Alaska item in the latest one would have given Alaska Native veterans of the Vietnam War era another opportunity to select land for a personal allotment. The bill also had several nationwide measures, including a really big one. It would make the Land and Water Conservation Fund permanent. The fund allows the federal government to improve parks and recreation areas. It also sends piles of money to the states. It's been popular on the left and the right for decades. But not everyone likes it.
Is there an objection to the original request from the senator from Alaska?
Yes, I object.
The senator from Utah's...
That's Senator Mike Lee, and oh boy, does he object.
This bill permanently reauthorizes the Land and Water Conservation Fund.
an entity that's been used to acquire more federal land. Now, coming from a state where two-thirds of the land is owned by the federal government, where we can't do anything without leave from the federal government, this hurts.
Lee said he'd let the bill proceed if he could shield Utah from a different law, the one that allows presidents to protect land by declaring it a monument. Lee demanded senators add two words to the bill.
Two words. The words "or Utah."
Utah has a lot at stake with the monuments law. It had two monuments that were more than 1 million acres each before President Trump decided to shrink them. But bill supporters say the exemption Lee wants is too controversial to be included in the bill. So Lee blocked the entire thing. Senators on both sides lamented Lee's tenacity. Republican Senator Cory Gardner of Colorado is normally cheery and mild-mannered. But he was furious about losing some of the bill's elements, like a section that would improve firefighting technology.
That was in this bill, to protect our communities from wildfire and to protect our firefighters from injury in this bill. The other thing in this bill, Minturn, Colorado.
That's a town of 1,000 near Vail. Gardner explained that it needs to make repairs to its water supply system.
For years been trying to fix it. They can't because it's in a wilderness area. So we have to have an act of Congress to allow a city to fix their water system. Rejected tonight because we weren't allowed to vote.
Murkowski says the episode was more than frustrating.
One person just stalled the whole thing out.
And that's the U.S. Senate for you. You can't move a bill quickly unless everyone agrees. And Murkowski accepts that.
Unanimous consent requires a level of cooperation, which I think is good for the body, but it also does allow for good work to be irrevocably stalled.
She says leaders on both sides of the aisle have agreed to revive the bill this month, this time under Rule 14, a process Lee can't block, not on his own. Because that's also the Senate for you. For just about every rule, there's another rule that provides a workaround. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Last month, Japan announced that it is leaving the international group that regulates whaling and will resume commercial whaling in its own coastal waters. That move provoked some criticism. Commercial whaling has been banned by the International Whaling Commission since the 1980s. But separate from that, Japan's decision may have consequences for Alaska's legal subsistence whaling. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Ravenna Koenig reports.
Japan's departure means it will no longer conduct what it calls scientific whaling outside its waters, which was criticized by some as a loophole. Instead, it will hunt commercially in its own waters. The announcement comes on the heels of a proposal Japan made to resume commercial whaling at a recent meeting of the IWC, a proposal that failed. Japan's leaving the commission has potential consequences for Alaska whalers, whose quota for legal subsistence whaling is set by the IWC.
It would be in our best interest to have Japan remain with the IWC. They were a strong ally of ours in obtaining our quota.
John Hobson Jr. is chairman of the Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission and a whaling captain in Wainwright. It's too soon to know the ultimate impact of Japan's decision, but the country does play an important role at the IWC, says Jessica Lefebvre, a lawyer for AEWC.
Japan is a key member of the group within the body that refers to themselves as a sustainable use group. So it's Japan, Norway, Iceland, a number of smaller countries.
She says it's possible that other countries in the sustainable use group could follow Japan's example and leave the IWC as well, diminishing support for Alaska whalers. That could make a critical rule change that passed last year less secure. The rule change made the renewal of Aboriginal subsistence whaling quotas, including Alaska's, automatic, provided certain conditions are met.
That was Ravenna Koenig in Fairbanks for Alaska's Energy Desk. A new rule proposed by the U.S. Department of Agriculture is alarming Alaska food security advocates who say it would make it tougher to waive work requirements for food stamps. The proposed rule would make it harder for states to get that waiver. Most adults have to participate in employment, work training, or an approved volunteer position to get food stamps. Alaska advocates are concerned that the proposed rule would cause a disruption on people who live in subsistence-dependent villages. You're listening to KTOO News and KTOO Juneau.